Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Rare Bird Radio. This is a special edition of the Approaching the Natural podcast because I am Julia Callahan. I am one of the publicists and editors here at Rare Bird Lit, and I will be today interviewing Sid Garza-Hillman, who is the author of Approaching the Natural. Sid usually does the interviews, but we thought today for a little mix-up, I would give the interview. So, Sid, if you don't know, is a certified nutritionist and wellness coach and is the program's director for the Mendocino Center for Living Well at the Stanford Inn up in Mendocino, California. And Sid and I share a couple of things. Sid lived in L.A. and is now in Northern California, and I grew up in Northern California and now live in Los Angeles. So we've got some interesting things to talk about today. So, Sid, my first question, first I actually want you to sort of outline your argument in the book, because you talk about a very simple approach to approaching the natural, if you will. You know, throughout the book you talk about these small steps, and as someone personally who has been in and out of nutritionist's office since I was in about the fifth grade, that's something that not all nutritionists have told me or talk about. So I want to know how you sort of came up with this and how you came to this idea of approaching the natural.
Okay. First of all, thank you. And I'll have one question for you later, which is why anybody would move from Northern California down to Los Angeles. So we can get into that later.
Okay.
That's a whole separate interview. My approach, and I'm probably going to overuse the word approach just because that's why I named the book that way, because it is an approach. It came after years of working with people as a nutritionist and also as a general health, you know, wellness kind of coach, you know, position with people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to, I'll be really honest, and I address this in the book, it was really frustrating in the beginning because I had the knowledge, but I wasn't as experienced, you know, as a coach. And I would recommend, you know, pretty broad strokes with people, and they would, you know, take them and use them and then not after, you know, whatever, how much time, 1 or 2 months. And I kept going, God, I got to crack this nut. You know, I got to figure out, I never, ever wanted and still don't want to be the kind of practitioner that people have to come to for 10 years every week, you know, mm-hmm. and I don't sell pills and supplements. I should, because I would make a ton of money doing that, but I don't. And I don't because I don't want to be, I want to help people in their trek and I want to be successful at what I do. And so I have some clients that, you know, call me once a year and go, hey, let me have a little tune up, and great, I love it. You know, they kind of slip back, but they're kind of on the good path. I wanted to figure out a way to do that. So one thing I started experimenting with, and I will just qualify this by saying that if somebody comes to me, which has happened on occasion, you know, with stage 4 cancer,
mm-hmm.
or full-blown, you know, diabetes or full-blown Hashimoto's thyroiditis, it's a different mm-hmm. conversation. It's not the small step conversation. It's they're coming to me because they have something acute. It's heavy duty. They're working with an MD. They're on prescription medication. And I want to provide them the support nutritionally to handle whatever modality they're using, you know, out in the world. It could be Chinese herbals or Ayurveda or whatever. I want to provide the nutrition, and sometimes it's a little more drastic, so I'll just kind of set that up. But all things being equal, for people who you know, don't feel that well, they're overweight, they can't lose their weight, they're fatigued, they just want to incorporating a healthier lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
what I found was over my experience was literally the smaller the step, the more
mm-hmm.
profound. And it's totally antithetical to what most people think. They think, you know, if I have to start exercising because my doctor told me I should exercise, I need to go buy a bunch of gear, and I got to go to the gym for an hour every day, and I got to, you know, this and that, and they're going to do that for a short period of time, and then they're going to burn out.
Mm-hmm.
My argument is minimize the quality and quantity of that step to something that's doable for you in the context of your life when you start it. And what I mean by that is, if I'm just a person who never exercises and I sit on a couch all day and I'm overweight and I've got high blood pressure and I've got heart disease and everything else, and my doctor's like, you got to exercise, or somebody told you, you got better get off your butt and exercise because you're going to cut your life short. Maybe for that person, they're mm-hmm. they're not going to go to the gym an hour every day because that's not who they are. My argument and my coaching would be get up off the couch, walk down the hallway, and walk back to your couch and sit down. If that's all you can do right now, that's profound, because what happens is if you do that every day, you become a person who exercises.
Right.
Granted, not an hour a day, but that's an argument for degrees, but you set the foundation of I am a person who exercises. And in my book I kind of go through, you know, scenarios, and that goes for food too. You know, if you want to start eating better, but you just love your Gouda cheese and you're not going to give it up, and I get it. Like, I get it. People like their foods. They have this connection to food, and we can get, so I'm sure we're going to get into food a little bit, but
oh, yeah, we're.
If it just means a stalk of celery
right.
with your Gouda, and I think most people can handle it, start there. Because
okay.
what it does is it gets you thinking about your own health. It gets you
right.
thinking about your own wellness. And at the end of the day, a lot of my book, the message is when you take care of yourself, the act of taking care of yourself, even if it's just walking down the hallway, that is an act of taking care of yourself. When you do that with intention to say, this is all I can muster right now, but I'm going to do this act because it makes me feel good, and it's good for me, and I make the argument that what's good for you is good for your relationships and good for the world at whole, you know, at large. And so I make that. So that's how I, in long answer, is that how I came to that? Is just let's bring the steps down to something that's actually doable long term.
Right, right. Okay, so you talked about cheese a little bit. I'm just going to dive right in because I have specific questions for you about some of these things. And I will say, just from my own personal experience, I am one of those people that has always struggled with weight but is very active. And so it's mostly due to my diet, which includes a lot of cheese. And I was a vegan as a teenager. And we'll go into it a little more, but like I had to stop because I made myself anemic. Being a vegan as a teenager, one of the reasons was I wasn't taking any B vitamins. I didn't have any knowledge of any of that stuff. But one of the things that comes up a couple of times in your book is how reluctant people are to give up cheese. And I have to say, when I was a vegan and when I have thought of veganism again, that is the thing that I always come back to, is I do, as many people in your book seem to do, I love cheese. And I the thought of living without it is very hard for me. So is this? I'm assuming this is something that you get over and over again, is that like the cheese is hard to cut out of the diet, and are there other things that are hard for people to live without? And is it okay? Is it in the steps? Is it okay to stop at a step where we have just a little bit of that, or let ourselves indulge a little bit in those kinds of things?
Okay, so awesome. So great. Then I appreciate your honesty just in kind of how your relationship is with cheese, because I get it a lot, and I get it, well, I get, by a lot, I mean like almost every time, and I also get it more with cheese than any other food. I mean, I've literally had clients go, yeah, I've been dairy-free for 10 years. I go, wow, no milk, no cheese. Well, I eat cheese. You know, and it's like, they're just like, no milk, but like, they don't even want cheese to be dairy, because then they got to think about that, you know, and it's like,
right,
they're just convinced
right.
that it's its own entity. So
yeah.
I'll start by saying that first is that vegan and health
mm-hmm.
are not synonymous necessarily.
I learned that.
And
the hard way.
I really want to make that point, because I get a lot of people who go, well, I was vegan, but I was, you know, like you said, anemic, or I was vegan. And so in my purely nutrition, I will never mention the word vegan. I will
okay.
mention whole plants. I will mention
mm-hmm.
plants. I will never mention vegan. Why? Because potato chips are vegan, French fries are vegan, potato chips, white bread,
yes.
scotch. Thank God. And
thank God.
Coffee,
yeah.
You know, coffee is vegan. There are a
yeah.
lot of very white rice is vegan. There's a lot of very unhealthy food that is
yes.
that just doesn't have animal products in it. So nutritionally speaking, it means nothing to me
yes.
to have somebody say, well, I was vegan, but I mean, it means everything. But in terms of like, I go, well, I don't know what that means, because I had
right.
no idea what you were eating. Right.
right.
I've been 100% plant-based for 10 years. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, on Sunday I ran 11.2 miles. My wife has given birth to 3 children, you know, 2 of which were twins, 100% plant-based on
right.
very minimal supplementation at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to start by just setting that stage
mm-hmm.
that it, the fundamental thing is that I have an approach to what is the healthiest food and
okay.
how to put more of that in your body.
Right.
Okay.
And oh, sorry, continue, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay, well, and what I was going to sort of elaborate on with the plant-based, because, you and I are lucky enough to live in a part of the country where we do get, I can drive 10 miles and be at an orange grove. I'm sure you can look outside your window and see some kind of plant growing. I mean, where I grew up, all of the strawberries in the whole country are grown where I grew up. And so for people who maybe live a bit farther away and it's harder for them to get the plants, and it's maybe more expensive for them to get those good, like the kale and the chard and the good leafy plants, is there with modern technologies and with modern transportation, is there a good way for them to get these into their houses, to learn how to cook with them, to eat them properly, all that stuff?
Well, I think the good news about the internet is that rare is there a place that people live, especially in the developed world, like the U.S., where you don't have access to some Safeway or something. Walmart carries organic produce now.
Right.
It's so much easier, and there are degrees even of that. And I think everybody has access to a cucumber and celery, and maybe not organic, and that's okay too. I wish that organic was available to everybody at a reasonable price, because I think, that's a whole other conversation. The way that we subsidize certain foods in this country, it's criminal.
Yeah, yeah,
I've stood in line buying a
coming up now.
I've stood in line buying a three, with somebody buying a Swanson's TV dinner behind me for almost the same price. I still think I'm getting more for my money with a cucumber, but that's so like a different argument.
Yeah.
So to that end, all I would say is that people have. You can find it. You can find brown rice. You can find, buckwheat and millet and amaranth and wild rice and things like that. You can find them on the internet. You can ask your local store to order things. Now, granted, I know that there are communities like in New Jersey. They have communities where your only food source is fast food or the corner store.
Mm-hmm.
It's degrees, and I'm working to that end. I want to be able to, eventually as I move forward in my career, tackle those kinds of things head on in whatever manifestation that happens to be, if it's a nonprofit or if I'm working in conjunction with somebody. Because I just think, I know that there's some headway being made in the schools with school lunches, but I just don't think it's nearly enough. It's pathetic,
Yeah, yeah.
But again, so first is that. And secondly, with the whole the vegan. So your question was about the vegan, and then there was the separate question initially was what?
The separate question was about people, cheese and how much, and not just cheese. I mean, cheese is my Achilles heel, but mm-hmm. Sort of for other people. I mean, I know people who don't eat any meat except they have to have bacon, or something like that. Or they feel that they have to have bacon. So for us, and I know I myself, and I know a lot of people who have taken great measures to cut down the amount of cheese that we consume. But is there room for that? Is there a little bit of wiggle room? Because I know, one of the things that the problems that I have with living in California is there are these crazy diets that people go on where there's no wiggle room at all. And I always thought that was so odd, and that was so, it just begs you to go and, if I can't have carbohydrates for a certain amount of time, all I want is to go eat, an entire loaf of bread.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Right. So that's part of why I wrote my book, because
right.
I don't find telling people not to do something useful.
Yeah.
But, I don't find it result-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what I do is add things in. I will tell you that my wife, for instance, was the absolute cheese addict,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so she just came to a point in her life where she started to make changes and started to feel better. And now if you talk to her, she is not even at all tempted
okay.
by cheese, literally not at all. And she was an absolute cheese crazy person. I will say that a couple things I want to say is, we have a relationship as humans to food that is completely unnatural and completely unlike any other wild species.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean we go to food, we, like you said, people just feel like they need bacon. I get that a lot where I go like, you know, somebody will say, well, I just crave chicken, so I must need that protein.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what's happening there. We are not the gorilla in the wild that has a nutritional and a caloric need and is driven instinctually to a food that is going to provide both. In the wild, anything that a gorilla eats is going to be highly nutritious.
Right.
What we have come to as humans is that we are drawn to food for taste and comfort and ritual and tradition. I understand all that. And it's in the context of that I make my recommendations to most people, and that is that if you're going to have your XYZ cheese or everything, start to supplement, and I mean supplement meaning not pills, but start to supplement with healthy foods and understand that cheese is not a healthy food
by
any standard.
Yes.
Except for the standards of people who want to make money selling cheese. But it's not a healthy food. It is not making our country healthy. It is not yielding us healthy bones, because we have the worst bone health in the entire world, and yet we consume more calcium than almost any other country. It's a junk food. It's the cup of coffee that I'm sipping right now. I'm as healthy as I want to be at 44. I have a completely flat stomach. I just told you I ran 11.2 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I drink coffee. I understand that in the context of what I eat, coffee isn't the healthy thing that I eat, but I do it because I enjoy it and I understand.
Right.
And part of what my book is if you are going to eat cheese, then do it with the knowledge that what you're putting in your body isn't healthy for you,
mm-hmm.
and that it's about taste. Don't try to justify it because of health and because of strong bones. The facts aren't there.
Right.
And the problem is, what happens, though, is when you start to think in that way and you start to think about your body and you start to think, okay, well, I really do love cheese. I know it's not good for me. I'm going to eat it. But then you start thinking, if I didn't eat cheese and I started to bring in broccoli and zucchini, and I could go on for literally an hour with every kind of vegetable and whole grain there is, and then all of a sudden I would start losing weight,
mm-hmm.
because I have to count calories, or I mean, I haven't recommended anybody to count calories ever. I haven't counted calories in 10 years. I have a perfectly flat stomach. I don't count carbs, protein grams, fat grams, vitamin, nothing, no milligrams of any vitamin or mineral, period. I don't, because I eat a variety of whole plants, and my body is intelligent and it knows what to do with that real food that I put in it. So what happens to people is when they start to bring in those things. So in short answer to your question of could you have a little cheese and be perfectly healthy? Probably,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you're going to – cheese is one of these things where we are not meant – we are not designed to breastfeed as adults. We are designed to breastfeed from our mothers until around the age of 2 and then wean and mm-hmm. be weaned from mother's milk. Instead, what we do in this country is we seamlessly bring in cow's milk. And we continue breastfeeding and through our whole lives. And what that literally does biologically and physiologically in the body is it creates has an opiate effect in the
right.
brain. It's because mammal milk has a calming effect. It has it helps the baby want to feed. But so what you're talking about when you say I just love cheese so much is it literally has a calming and opiate-like effect on your brain, the same way that bacon does on the person who just feels like they have to have bacon. It's a pleasure center issue. It's not the reason why gorillas don't overeat in the wild. There's no obese gorillas. There's no obese wild animals. They're the right weight, exactly the right weight, all of them, because they eat such nutrient-dense food that their bodies say, okay, cool, I'm great. My approach to weight loss is to add in such nutrient, I call them heavy box foods in the book,
mm-hmm.
but bring in heavy box foods. You cannot overeat heavy box foods. That's why you can feel starving for a chicken or burrito or something, and then if you think, oh, they'll have a salad instead, all of a sudden you're not as hungry.
Right.
That's because what you're doing now is not about nutrition and healthy calories. It's about taste and that high that you get from food. And so part of my job is to figure out how to wade through that sort of relationship that people have with food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, I definitely agree with that, and I, you know, like I said, I've been in and out of many nutritionists' office, and cheese is the sticking point for me. Now, I told you before the show started that my mother, who is, I will say, like the healthiest person that I know, is she has some questions because she is someone who has who is actually very close to an entirely grain, nuts and seeds and leafy green diet. She, you know, they eat almost entirely that. But her thing, and she works out actually quite a bit, but her thing is that she feels that she needs fish, and the protein and the particularly the fish oil, the aminos that come from fish. She eats fish twice a week, and that's it. She eats almost no dairy. She eats almost, and she doesn't eat any other kind of meat. So I wonder sort of in those is fish something that maybe people can substitute meat products for? Is fish something that people that we might actually need some of the nutrients from that? Or is that something that fits into this category as well as something that we're sort of addicted to, it, for lack of a better word?
Right. So I think that fish and dairy are completely different. You know, if you look at the human species, putting cow's milk into our daily regimen is insanity.
Yes,
I would not say the same thing about fish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll just start out right there. It's like,
yeah.
I wouldn't breastfeed, you know, I ask people when I, you know, when I do my classes and stuff, I go, does anybody walk by a pasture and see a bunch of beautiful cows in there and want to get up under one of them and suckle? Because that's what you're doing when you eat cheese and yogurt and milk. I don't think that we would naturally be drawn to milk, you know, breastfeeding from a cow. I think that we have, because of the industry of it, we package it in ways that we don't even recognize that it's cow's milk, and we sort of put it in our bodies in an unthinking way.
Right.
And so I think it's completely unnatural to us. I would never say the same thing about fish.
Mm-hmm.
So the human species has a history of eating flesh of animals. There's no denying that. I think there's an argument about that. I think we consumed a lot less than what's been previously thought of.
Absolutely.
Usually the estimates now are about 5%. In fact, in 1900, in this country, only 5% of our diet came from animals. It's just gotten way out of control. We eat animal products at every meal.
Right.
With regards to nutrition in fish, there's literally nothing in fish that you can't get from plants. Nothing.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is every amino acid is represented in bounty in the plant world. So protein is a non-issue. There's more protein in broccoli than there is in fish. The oil from the fish, which is for sure beneficial, the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, absolutely. You can get those from plants as well. And I know that, if I eat chia seeds, which I do almost every day, they are very high in omega-3 fatty acids. They're the short-chain ones, and when they go in the body can build the short-chain omega-3s into long chains, which is the DHA and EPA. EAPA, it goes EPA, then DHA. Fish already has the DHA, EPA, because the fish has done that conversion. But what I would say is that I do things like marine phytoplankton, which is a whole food. It's from the ocean. It's a direct source of DHA, EPA, because there is a small part of our population that can't make the short chains into the long chains. So people go to fish oil because they get the direct DHA, EPA source. So the thing is, you absolutely need omega-3 fatty acids in your diet. The question, just like you absolutely need protein in your diet, the question always comes to, what is the best form of those things? What is the form that's, you know, more in line with your body? In terms of animal foods, fish is the best. In my opinion, it's the best. Why I don't consume fish is for two reasons. One, I get everything I need from plants, so I don't need to eat fish. And two, because of what we've done environmentally to the oceans and what fishing does to, you know, what overfishing has done to the oceans, I don't want any part of that process and that cycle. And so, right, and so that's kind of where, if you want to mention vegan, that's where sort of the vegan word starts to come into play is, you know, with the cheese, why don't I have a little bit of cheese if I could be perfectly healthy? Because I know what that does to the environment. I know what that does to the animals, and that's just a decision I make for myself. Purely nutritionally speaking, you can have cheese once in a while and be perfectly healthy. There's tons of people who do that, but not because of the cheese.
Yeah.
Right? And I want to – that's my big point. You can be totally healthy and have a little cheese, but it's not because of the cheese.
Right, that you're healthy.
So I just don't want – I want to inform people enough to know, hey, man, you know, I like beer. I like single malt scotch, you know, I and like I said, I'm perfectly healthy, but I have a little scotch now and then. And I'm not healthy because of the scotch. Scotch is horrible for me. And if I were feeling not well or if I were overweight, I would knock scotch out, just like I'd knock coffee out. I'd go to the things that aren't good for me and take those out.
So. Yeah. I don't know if I could ever give up coffee, but I have it.
Give it up for 3 weeks and then have a cup of coffee, and it's like doing a line of Coke. it's like when you I drink it every day, and I gave it up one time. I was recording an album with my band years ago, and I gave it up like 3 weeks before I went into the studio to record. And so I was the first day in the studio, I was exhausted. We'd pulled like a 14-hour day, and I was like, I've got to have a cup of coffee. And I went across the street to the hotel cafe. We were down in Hollywood actually, and. Got a large and sat there in the studio and drank it, and my palms started to sweat. I started talking like really fast, and it was like, oh my God, this is insane. So I decided it was really not smart for me to give it up.
Yeah.
You know, that was my conclusion.
Yeah. I like that conclusion. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
So one of the things about the book I really liked and that I thought was really interesting, because I have a lot of people always trying to push this stuff on me. And I sort of, you made me feel better about when I say no, but was the stuff about the multivitamin, the pills, the supplements is, you know, I come from Northern California. People are very into, you know, supplements and vitamins there. And I always said, no, no, no. Like, you know, I want to get it from food. I don't know whether or not I've actually achieved that, but that's sort of besides the point. So maybe we can explain a little bit about your view on these supplements, and when should we take them, when should we not take them, and what kinds of things should we be looking for in our health and our feeling when we say, okay, maybe I need B12, maybe I need vitamin D, whatever it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so just so I'm going to address supplementation in general.
Yeah, please.
Okay?
Yeah.
Your instinct is perfect, which is that you want to get it from food. So part of why I wrote the book is because there is conflicting research every day. You have literally, you know, somebody says doing A is the best thing ever, and then literally, you know, the next day there's a paper that's published that says doing A is the worst thing ever. People, their heads are going to blow up with the amount of. I read these books and I read these studies, and I'm just like, what is the deal here? And so part of what I wanted to do is sort of draw a step back a few and go really look at us as a species. Instead of, I just think we overthink this to the point of absurdity. I say that in the book repeatedly. So you can make the argument that supplements are good, supplements are bad. I can say with confidence, is it natural to put a little pill that has nutrients that are taken out of food in a laboratory and isolated and put in that little pill with fillers and junk and put in a bottle, a plastic bottle that's sitting on a shelf for God knows how long, and putting that in your body. Is that natural? Now, certainly there's lots of things that are unnatural, but I can make that argument to myself and say, that isn't right. And I think the body reacts against that, and that's why synthetic vitamins are slightly acid forming in sort of like what the alkaline acid balance. I don't want to get into that too deep right now, but there's things that are acid forming in our bodies and the stress that causes on our bodies. And by the way, I look at weight gain as a stress response. I look at that as a body under stress, and so part of my approach as a nutritionist is to remove the stress, and as a wellness coach too, is to remove stress, and that can be psychological stress. So I recommend people, you know, get into hypnotherapy or therapy as part of their overall health regimen, meditation, journaling. I address all those things in the book because it's never just about, only one chapter in my book is nutrition, because it's
right.
The picture of the human body.
Yeah.
So when it comes to supplementation, I did a consultation one time with a woman who was on 20, she took 29 pills every day. And I think like other things that we do, we are drawn to, especially in this country, because Western medicine is the prevailing modality that we use for healthcare, even though that's a misnomer, but it's healthcare, is we expect that we are going to get something we can put in our bodies that will yield immediate results. We are used to getting a headache and getting a pill, and it's done. And unfortunately, that gets translated into what we put in our bodies with regards to food. And that's why we think, well, we can eat fine, but as long as we have this pill and that pill and that pill and that pill. So what I did is, in my own trek, and then as I became a professional, you know, nutritionist, and what I do is I started to really experiment, and I take almost zero supplementation. And by that, I mean I take vitamin D now and then. John McDougall is a doctor out of Santa Rosa, and his argument is that we're even taking too much vitamin D. It needs a fraction of what most people are even recommending. I have worked with people who are vitamin D deficient. I put them on vitamin D for a period of time to kind of overtake that. But what is vitamin D? Vitamin D is a hormone-like vitamin that's produced by the body when you're in the sun.
Yeah.
So the best thing you can do, and what I do, is pop out in the sun for 10 or 15 minutes a few times a week. B12, people go, well, I got to eat meat because I got to get the B12. The reason why B12 is in meat is because the animals eat the microorganisms that are in the soil. And what we did as humans is, because of necessity, because we've created this sort of world that we need to transport our food, is we wash our food, and we you know, it sits on the market shelf, and the guy walks by and sprays it down, and all that soil is washed away. So we don't get the bacteria that creates the vitamin B12 in our bodies. In reaction to that, I'm not going to eat meat because there's not enough positive about eating meat. There's so much negative. I'm not going to eat meat just to get the B12. So I take a little B12 supplement. If I walked out to my garden and picked a carrot and ate it out of the ground with soil still on it, I'd have my B12.
Right.
And that's why gorillas and apes aren't B12 deficient. So I supplement a little with that, literally now and then. I mean, I probably take it once, probably two or three times a month.
Yeah.
Okay? That's it.
That's
there, there's my supplementation right there. My wife, by the way, gave birth to twins, took them to full term for twins. She was taking half the dose of a prenatal vitamin now and then.
Yeah.
And they're perfectly healthy. So the thing of like, well, you gotta this and you gotta that and you gotta, it's like, everybody take a deep breath. It's okay. And I think what happens is people want to protect the food that they enjoy.
Right.
And so that's why I'm not going to tell you, Julia, stop eating cheese, because like you just said, you're going to be like, whoa, I want cheese more than ever now.
Yeah.
What I'd rather do is start adding things in to make you feel so good that when you eat cheese, it makes you feel not good.
Feel disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you go like, I don't even want the damn thing. And I had a client literally last year who came up here, and she goes, I want to take you out to breakfast. She was so happy. She goes, I was at a party. My favorite cheese was on the table. I walked up to have a little bite because I knew, you know, it'd be fine if I had a little bite, and I didn't feel like having it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because she came to me with such severe gastric reflux that her life was being ruined, and I got her on top of that, and she's had a quality of life improvement that she doesn't want to even want the cheese, because she doesn't want to feel like that ever again.
Yeah,
and that's a recipe for long term success.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, and I mean, something that you mentioned in there that I kind of want to address to get away from sort of the diet, because the book really does, there's one chapter on diet, and the rest is sort of about physical, mental, you know, sort of thinking about ourselves within the world, that I find really interesting and really, I mean, something that I, as someone who lives in Los Angeles, I mean, it very much struck a chord because, you know, I work in downtown L.A., I'm surrounded by cement all the time.
Right.
And so what I really liked is, and maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on, is the sort of getting the taking the time to be with nature and sort of, and not in some like, you know, oh, let's all go, as you say in the book, let's all go hug trees, not in that kind of way. I mean, you say, let's not all do that, but although you can if you want, obviously. But,
right.
But you know, just taking time to be, to touch plants, to be barefoot in nature. I mean, there's a part of me that in Los Angeles, I mean, I live near Griffith Park, and I'm not going to go barefoot at all in Griffith Park. I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to step on a needle and, you know, contract some sort of disease if I do that. But are there ways that someone who lives in one of the biggest urban areas in the country can go and experience this and can go and, you know, get my little nature fix and then be back in the city?
So
are there ways to do that?
Absolutely. And it's a great question, because this speaks to what I addressed earlier, which was how little steps can be really profound. And I think what happens is you're living in a city, because I lived in LA too, and you think, well, I can't get to the forest, I can't get to Big Bear, I can't, so it's all or nothing.
Right.
And so what I make, this is the argument I make in the book, which is even just, there are trees downtown. There are, you know, trees in Griffith Park. You can touch a tree. And I make the case in chapter three of what literally happens in your body when you electrically connect to the earth. But I think there's a psychological aspect to that too. And so even if it's just the smallest step of sitting on the grass in Griffith Park and putting your hand on a tree, it just for a minute, I think that makes a difference, because that's a minute that you know that you did something like that to reconnect, to recalibrate your body. And I think a minute makes a huge difference. I think if people are like, well, it's only a minute, it's the same thing as saying, well, I only walk down the hallway. That's huge. If you weren't going to walk down the hallway, or you weren't going to connect to nature at all otherwise, I think that's a fantastic thing. And there's not a place on the earth where there isn't a patch of nature or bare ground, you know, at least right now, where you can't, I mean, Central Park and, you know, New York City's got, you know, this amazing park. If I were in Griffith Park, I would take my bare feet off. I would
okay.
watch out where I was doing that, but I would take my shoe off.
Right.
You know,
right.
I wouldn't, you know, I would look around first, but
yeah.
It's not strewn with needles. I've been to Griffith
Park.
No, it's
not. It's not.
Unless it's changed. But there's places in Griffith Park that are fine, and
you could
sit down on a bench next to a tree and kind of rest. You don't want to look like a crazy person, but you want to kind of touch a tree with your bare skin. And kind of just, it sounds hippy-dippy, but I'm not a hippie. And there's no criticism here. I'm just saying I'm a regular guy. I'm an indie rock musician, actor. I'm a nutritionist. But I still make the effort, and I will pop my shoes off whenever and wherever I can, or touch a tree wherever and whenever I can.
Well, and in a way, that sort of leads into the mental. I mean, I don't want to call it mental health, because it's not that is a loaded term. But
yeah.
But you know, it's sort of the mental part of your book. And it, in a way, that does accomplish both, doesn't it? That you could take it a minute and just sit there and, you know, don't stare at your computer, touch this tree, like, you know, get your little nature fix. And then you're also getting out of the television, all the different things that we constantly have going on, mostly backlit screens that we're staring at all the time. It sort of gets you out of that as well, in a way, doesn't it? I mean,
I think for sure. And
yeah.
I think that I make the argument that all those things that we use to distract us, and I use them too. You know, and this is like, I think people go, well, you're on the cell phone. You bet. And I'm totally guilty of being connected too much, and I have to be really mindful to not connect. And so I say that that's exactly the same thing as the food that we eat. We get high from being it makes it so that we don't have to think about things that we may not want to think about.
Right.
I get it, you know, and I have to make a conscious effort to, for instance, not have Numino cookies in my house, because I will plow through an entire bag. And so I'm like everybody else. I have that same pleasure center drive that human beings are designed with. It's just that we have unnatural food at our disposal when we have that drive, whereas in the wild we would never come across a bag of Numino cookies. We would just, whatever we would eat in nature would be healthy for us. Likewise with nature and with cell phones and computers and movies and blah blah blah, it's like it's all that kind of quick fix stuff. To take just a moment and to carve out, even if it's, I swear to God, I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating, even if it's 30 seconds, that is a mindful act, an act of self-care, and an act of health that relates to the body just as much as it does really as it relates to the mind. I will say that I have a grounding pad that connects to the earth through the grounding outlet, and when I'm sitting on my laptop, I have my feet on that, and it's a way. I think technology is fantastic when it's used to that end. I think it's great that I can take a vitamin B12 supplement, that somebody's done that. But that doesn't mean that all supplements, and that I should take as many supplements as possible. I think that there's an intelligent and balanced way to approach your health, which is that sometimes technology is necessary. I live in a very small town, very remote. I have to get things from the internet. Otherwise, I can't get the things that I feel like I want to have that speak to the quality of life and my own health. Beautiful. Great. I love that we can do that. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with the technology of the grounding things and just going downstairs and taking a minute, you know, walking with, I say in the book, like, go with a friend, walk around the park for a half hour or whatever your lunch break is, and try not to talk about work for 15 minutes. You know what? Over time, every day, day in and day out, what a profound effect that would have on the quality of your life. And I have to make a real, really big effort in my own life to do exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, God, that sounds wonderful to me. And I definitely, after reading the book, felt like, okay, you know, these are things that I can do. These are things that I... as a person who's busy, as a person who works a lot, as a person who lives in this, you know, big city, can do. And I think that's really what I took away from it. You know, I mean, personally, as someone who, like I said, has struggled with all of this, has gone through all of this, I did really appreciate that while I was reading the book. And the small steps and, you know, we didn't really address this and we're running out of time, but you do talk about exercising and over-exercising and particularly injury, causing yourself injury by over-exercising. And I have done that. I will, you know, give a little disclaimer that I do play roller derby. So I have seriously injured myself a few times. And it was nice to sort of be reassured that even when you injure yourself, you can come back slowly and do those little chunks and, you know, get back to it. So I really appreciated that as well.
Thank you. No, well, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's with everything else, there's balance. And I'm totally guilty of that too. I would push myself. I've gotten a lot better about that because I've sort of been mindful about what I can do, you know, for my own body, and I'm training for a half marathon now, and I can do that, and it's all about taking, you know, just like everything else, it's taking the step. But the important thing is to move your body and to be somebody who, you know, again, the premise is that we were designed to move, you know, and we weren't designed to sit down the way that we sit down and lay down and do everything else and be able to drive through to get food without even getting out of our cars. And so we have to, in this day and age, we have to make a conscious effort to reincorporate a more natural existence in the context of the fact that we live in cities. And I'm not saying I know we can't move away from cities and go live in the forest. I get it. I'm just saying reintroduce a little bit by degrees, a little bit more of stuff that's in line with our nature. And I think that adds to the quality of life for people. And I've seen that in my own experience with my own life, but also with my clients as well.
Yeah. Well, we're about out of time, so I just want to say thank you for this. It's been a really great discussion, and I learned a lot, and sometimes I think that that's no longer possible. So because I've read a lot about nutrition and health, and so I really learned a lot, and I really appreciated it. And for those of you listening, the book is called Approaching the Natural, A Health Manifesto by Sid Garza Hillman, and it is out now. Go to your local independent bookstore, and if you can't get to one of those, it is available on Powell's.com and Amazon.com. And Sid, I want to say thank you, and thanks for this book. It really, like I said, shed some light on things for me and illuminated a few things as well. And I'm sure my mother will be emailing you questions about all of it.
Okay, good. And I want to thank you and hi to Julia's mom. But I wanted to just also thank you. This was super fun. We could talk for hours. So I really appreciate your questions are fantastic. So thank you so much, Julia.
Absolutely. And thank you and all the best. And we will see you. We'll hear from you next week.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye. It's
It's just no good anymore since you went away. Now I spend my time just making rhymes of yesterday. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. One is the loneliest number. One is the loneliest number. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number, much, much worse than two. One is a number divided by two.